on the Middle East.
Al Monitor's podcast on the big and interesting developments in the region. Today, I'll be revisiting the plight of the Israeli-Russian scholar Elizabeth Tsurkov, who has been held for more than 1 year now by the Iran-backed Iraqi Shia militia group Kataib al-Hizbullah. Kataib al-Hizbullah is designated by the United States government as a terrorist group and continues to mount attacks against US forces in Iraq and Syria. Yet its members are on the Iraqi government's payroll, as they are part of the so-called Popular Mobilization Forces established in 2014 to fight the Islamic State. As such, the government should in theory have the influence to secure Tsurkov's release, but it claims to not know who is holding her. Tsurkov, a doctoral student at Princeton University whose research focused on pro-Iran factions in Iraq, was abducted by the group in Baghdad in March 2023. A proof-of-life video showing a shaken Tsurkov was aired in November on a TV station close to the Shia militias, but she has not been heard from since. I spoke to Elizabeth's sister Emma, who has been determinedly lobbying for her freedom, about the latest developments, including her run-in with Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani during his trip to Washington earlier this month, where he met with US President Joe Biden. Welcome to our program, Emma.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So it's been a rather eventful few weeks for you, with the Iraqi Prime Minister having traveled to Washington, and you actually had the opportunity to sort of see him, right, at the Atlantic Council, where you pretty much attacked him verbally for failing to do anything for Elizabeth. So just kindly tell us how that visit went from your point of view. Did you gain any traction in your fight to get Elizabeth home? Did you get any sense that the Iraqi Prime Minister is receptive to your demands? Because we did hear him tell Christian Amanpour that he was trying to get to the bottom of this.
Yes. So in terms of how the visit went, I would say it was, I think, good in the sense that I managed to engage members of the Iraqi government that generally were completely unavailable before. For example, I tried to meet with the Iraqi ambassador to the US, Hira, for over a year now. And it took 6 months to even get acknowledged. And then I was told he doesn't have the time. And during this visit, I mean, I didn't have a scheduled meeting with him, but I just approached him at the Willard Hotel, where the Iraqi delegation and I was staying. And so that was very productive. In terms of the event at the Atlantic Council, I think it's worth pointing out that I didn't go into the event intending to disrupt it. And I got really frustrated because Iraqi Prime Minister was talking about how technologically advanced Iraq is and how strong the armed forces of Iraq are and how competent they are. And that's a part that just, I guess, set me off, because I keep, in all my engagements with the Iraqis and in the response, both in interviews and to the American government, it's the answers that Sudani gave to Christian Amanpour on air is the same one the entire Iraqi delegation has been giving me, and it's the same one that was given to President Biden when Prime Minister Sudani was asked about my sister in the White House. And it's always the same answer of, we're doing the best we can, we don't even know who holds her, and it's just absurd.
You said that it was a good meeting with the Iraqi ambassador. What did he tell you?
Well, I wouldn't say it was good. I think it was good that I was able to meet with him. He told me the same thing, that they're working on it, that it's something that they care about, that they have heard my sister's name brought up in every meeting they had in Washington. So it was good to see that the pressure is working, but he didn't say anything concrete about them having actually made any progress on the supposed investigations that their supposed competent task force has undertaken.
So, what is the US government telling you about any progress on this file? I mean, beyond putting pressure on the Iraqis, have they managed to get any information out of them?
So I was told that they keep engaging with the Iraqis, that my sister was brought up at the highest level there is. It was brought up by President Biden during the meeting in the White House with Prime Minister Sudani, which I'm very grateful for. This is not something I take for granted at all. And that there will be follow-up because Prime Minister promised that they're going to do everything they can. I would be happy to see that progress has been made, but my feeling is just, as far as I'm concerned, until I see anything, it's full pressure ahead because there is simply, I don't see any willingness from the Iraqis to actually do anything by themselves. They need to be pressured and pushed to do the right thing.
So how are
Because
we sure that she's still with Kataib Hezbollah? And just to remind our audience, how do we know in the first place that she is being held by them?
several things. In terms of how do we know that Kataib Hezbollah has her? That has been the consensus of the authorities of multiple governments all along, and it seems that in private, the Iraqi government doesn't even deny that. They know it is Hezbollah. So that's one thing. How do we know that she's still in their hands? So as of several weeks ago, we know that she's alive in Iraq and at the hands of Hezbollah. So there is broad consensus about that from the authorities of multiple countries.
We've heard she's been moved from Baghdad to Babylon. Is that true?
It seems to be the case.
And why would they do that? Do we have any sort of insight onto why they would decide to move her?
It's essentially under the control of Hezbollah. It's an area where the Iraqi police and military don't dare entering. And that's where Kataib Hezbollah is most comfortable holding her because they know that the Iraqi authorities are not going to come and take her from them. So that's probably the explanation. But I mean, short of asking the person who moved her, we can't know for certain.
What do they want from you or from her family or other family members, or
It's a
why
very
are they
good.
holding her?
It's a very good question, and I have no idea. I have tried every possible way I could think of to try and figure out what they want. They have not told me what they want. They haven't told anyone what they want. It is not clear to me why are they holding her hostage. What is the point
I
of
saw some
it?
press reports claiming they wanted some prisoners freed in exchange for her freedom. Is that just like speculation, baseless speculation?
I haven't heard of that, but what I mean, I don't even know what prisoners, I mean, held by which country. Like it's not even clear to me what prisoners would even be relevant here.
Well, it's very troubling that they moved her then, because again, it suggests that they have no intention of freeing her anytime soon.
It's very concerning. That's why I put my life on hold and traveled to DC and spent the entire week running around the Iraqi delegation trying to get a clear answer, try to get more information, because I'm desperate. I do not know what else to say or do
I
to
know.
help bring her back.
Imagine how hard it
And
must be because, I mean, Elizabeth is well known to me and she's a dear person, and it's just unbelievable this has happened to her. Are you getting any kind of support from other families who've gone through some similar ordeals?
Yes, there is a tragically created community of families of hostages, or some were ISIS hostages. I have to admit, I struggle with that. I don't know if it's because I keep somehow telling myself that my sister's case is going to be different, but it's hard for me to look at what life might look like in a few years if she's not back. I can't think about it. I keep just like focusing on the next thing I need to do to bring her home as soon as possible. And I
So, what are next steps? I mean, for you, the American government is clearly on the case, bringing it up all the time, putting pressure. So, what needs to happen next, given that
Yeah.
apparently, just bringing it up with the Iraqis and repeatedly doing that hasn't changed the situation. What needs to happen now?
Well, so several things. First of all, I think any notion w when the Iraqis tell the representatives of the US government that they're doing their best, I think we need to stop kidding ourselves that that's actually true. I think the best evidence of that is that just a few hours after the delegation landed back in Baghdad, one of the first things they did, it wasn't some new government action or crackdown of the militias. They just blocked for access in Iraq the website I created for my sister's campaign, the Bring Elizabeth Home website. It's no longer accessible in Iraq. And if that doesn't tell you what their state of mind is and what they intend to do, I don't know what does.
Well, it's
So in
very
the
the
US,
timing, though. The timing, I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you. The timing suggests that there's some kind of power struggle, wouldn't you say? I mean, how embarrassing for Sudani that no sooner does he get back from Washington that this happens. I mean, who has the authority to take that down? Who makes that decision in Iraq?
it's a very good question. It is a very opaque system. I have tried to figure that out. It seems that there are a lot of people in a position that's just kind of mystically named advisor to the prime minister, unclear what it means. I don't know who made the decision, but I'm of the opinion that the head of state is responsible for everything the state does. So if the Iraqi government mistakenly blocked that website, although I don't think that is an easy to make mistake, then they can unblock it. But
But
as
we
far
all
as I'm
know
concerned, as long as
that it's very complex, the power structure. I mean, there are competing centers of power, some obviously much more, influential than others, like the Federal Court of, in Iraq seems to be extremely, well, disruptive and influential. And everyone says that the Iranians, exert their influence through that court. So I'm sure there are many other organs of the state that Iran has influence over. We haven't talked about Iran, but do you believe that Iran is ultimately behind this?
well, I think that whatever the complex power struggle within Iraq, the bottom line is that the head of state is the one responsible. if he cannot govern, then he should admit it. He can't have it both ways. You can't come to the US, solicit investment in the Iraqi government, tell everyone what a great rule of law you have, how you have a terrific control over the entire country, and how much American companies should invest in infrastructure in Iraq, and how strong Iraq's democracy is. And at the same time, say that you can't even, your forces can't even enter half the country, and that democracy is only for show because they're blocking websites of issues that are embarrassing to the prime minister and his government. So I'm not particularly sympathetic to this claim of, the Iraqi government can't do anything, because they sure pretend as if they do when they visit D.C.
So, I
So
mean,
I take them at their word.
you've been lobbying for an arms embargo right now on Iraq. You think that should be the logical next step to put pressure on Iraq?
Well, I think that at a minimum, arms embargo is a big thing. I'm just focused on the next small step, I would say. So during the current visit to DC, there was an announcement made of a $140 million arms sale to Iraq for helicopters and their maintenance. And I think that definitely that arms sale should be held for until a hearing can be held to determine whether those helicopters are going to end up at the hands of Katib Hezbollah and other militias who themselves declared that they are back to targeting Americans. I mean, they themselves announced that they are back to targeting American personnel and assets in Iraq and Syria, and they have shown that they're true to, they stayed true to their word and have already attacked American bases in Syria and in Iraq. So, yeah, I think it is fully appropriate to have a congressional hearing. Congress's role is oversight. I think it is perfectly, as a matter of US policy, it is a perfectly reasonable request to hold an arms sale until it is clear that the helicopters being sold aren't going to be used against American soldiers.
Well, that's perfectly reasonable. How does that help Elizabeth?
Well, and that helps her if the Iraqis feel pressure. That's basically the way I see her coming back home is for the Iraqi government to finally make the political calculus that, as uncomfortable as it would be for Sudani to pressure KH to free her, it is more painful to not free her. And that is basically what needs to happen. He needs to feel enough pressure for it to be not worth it to him. So I don't know what his personal opinion about my sister's kidnapping, nor do I care. As far as I'm concerned, I'm going to continue applying full pressure until the calculus changes for him. And until he pressures Khatib Hezbollah to bring my sister back.
Well, Emma, thank you so very much for joining us here today. And you're simply amazing, all that effort you're putting in for your sister. I'm hoping that she has some sense that that's happening. She must, of course, knowing you, that you would never rest for a minute until she's free. And let's hope that happens very soon.
I really hope so. Thank you.
And this brings us to the end of this episode of On the Middle East. It's a horrible situation, and let's pray that Elizabeth is freed soon. Thanks for tuning in and keep coming back for more episodes of On the Middle East. Thank you and goodbye.